Hi, I'm WDLP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with...
I'm Justin Mark. I play Peter Pan in the show.
And I'm Sinclair Daniel, and I play Wendy Darling.
And, of course, we are talking about Peter Pan and Wendy, a timeless story at Shakespeare Theater Company now through January 12th. Thanks so much for joining us, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Okay, awesome. So we all know this tale. We've seen so many renditions of it. What makes this one unique? You know, maybe if we've seen the Mary Martin, Sandy Duncan, you know, any version on stage or even the Disney cartoon, there's so many versions. But what makes this one unique?
I think it kind of fleshes out a bit more of the psychology behind each of these sort of iconic characters. Works well on its own, like the original one, but I think there's a lot of problems with it as well. And I think Lauren Gunderson, the writer, just digs a little bit deeper in terms of trying to figure out why these people are the way they are and maybe help some of them change for the better, which is kind of cool. I don't know.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that this adaptation does a little more in favor of context for these characters. They're complex characters, and they're not all good, and they're not all bad, and they're flawed. They have their own set of skills. They have interests. And like Justin was saying, kind of why they are the way they are. And it's more of an exploration of humanity and relationship and growth and all the things that the original touches on. But we're in 2019 where I think audiences are a little more hungry for answers, and just it's interesting to watch people unfold as people instead of just one thing or the other. So I think this play does a good job of that, answering those questions about why people are the way they are, why we do the things we do, and how we come into situations that we find ourselves in.
Absolutely. And I know in this one, you know, Wendy, like you said, it gives a little more context. Wendy is a budding scientist winning a Nobel Prize. It's not just some, you know, some little girl who goes off on a journey. Give me the quick premise here. Obviously, everyone knows Peter Pan, but just give me the premise here as it is here, you know, in this modernized version. You know, who's Wendy at the start and when Peter arrives and that kind of thing?
Yeah, sure. So Wendy at the beginning of this this show is a young girl in Edwardian England, and she's kind of limited by all of the Edwardian norms, and she starts out having this disagreement with her mother about what kind of school she's going to go to. And her parents are saying she's going to finish in school, but she wants to go study science. She's an astronomer. She wants to be an astronomer. And she's already kind of frustrated because she doesn't understand why her mother doesn't understand. She's definitely ahead of her time, but not really apologetic for it. And so this version, when Peter Pan comes to visit, she kind of sees this as an opportunity to study something interesting, to make a discovery that will benefit her career, her education. And then I think along the way, you know, it starts out when she gets there to Neverland, she's still interested in the scientific sense, but she starts to develop this friendship and this connection that kind of becomes just as important, if not more important, than her studies. And I think that's great because in the original, if you'll go back and watch it, there's not too much driving Wendy to do things other than just a bit of a crush on Peter, a little bit of intrigue. But I think that Wendy's impetus in our version is a lot more interesting. And seeing where it kind of falls away and where it rears its head is also an interesting character trait of Wendy's. So, yeah, that's a little bit about Wendy in our version.
And so that's sort of, like you said, that's sort of how Wendy's been updated and fleshed out and given more context, which I think is great. Is Peter updated in any way? Is he giving more context, or is he still that, you know, the magical catalyst of all that?
I think Peter, too, is, yeah, updated. I think Neverland itself is sort of updated. I think Neverland's kind of at a a breaking point when we first are introduced to it, and we're first introduced to Peter. When he comes to this nursery and meets Wendy, I think maybe instead of whatever it was in the original, for us, maybe it's like Peter sees like the possibility of change within Wendy for himself, like maybe she can help him in some way that maybe he doesn't understand. He might not understand exactly what it is, but he knows that there's something there. And so when Wendy comes with him to Neverland, like things get crazy in our version, and the whole, everything you expect to happen in Neverland sort of goes awry. And it's kind of up to the community of Neverland as a whole to fix it. And I think Peter, you know, in the kind of traditional sense, is always like the one to win everything and the one to be the one that's the best. And I think maybe he realizes that he can't be that that's impossible to be on your own.
Awesome. And who is our Captain Hook in this one? Dote on your co-star as the deathly villain.
His name is Derek Smith, and he's very scary in real life. And he's not acting at all. He just walks on stage from the street and just is Captain. We didn't even have to get him a costume. No, he's really nice, and he's so funny, and we also have very serious scenes with him, too, and he plays those really well. And the whole cast is especially, I think, great, right?
Yeah, I'd say that everyone, what's great about this show is we're all adults getting to play make-believe or play children in some way, and it's very cool to see everyone step off stage and still have such a playful spirit. Everyone's very fun to be around, fun to talk to. Derek does kind of play this menacing character, but Hook is also funny. Like Hook, like whether he knows it or not, whether Hook knows that he's being funny or not, he's funny to watch and scary. And Tom Story as Smee is hilarious. Tom Story in real life is hilarious. So it's been a real joy to get to work with those people and see how they are in real life too.
Awesome. Now, I know in the, you know, the older traditional productions, they would, for Tinkerbell, you know, it would be sort of like a flashlight bouncing around and the famous, you know, we got to clap to bring her back to life kind of a thing. Is there a version of Tinkerbell in this? How is that actually done visually?
Yeah, we do. Tinkerbell is in our play as a ball of light and also as a human being person in Neverland. And she's played by Jenny Barber, who's amazing. And it was like a fun challenge, I think, for everyone to figure out how Tinkerbell engages with the people of Neverland as a human being, and then just sort of what that was sort of fun to discover, I think, with the director and with the rest of the cast. But at the beginning, she's a ball of light, and in Neverland, the idea is that she becomes a full-grown person. And we, too, do the clapping, if you believe, which is a very one of my favorite moments in the show, and it's just really rewarding.
Yeah, you almost gotta. You can't do Peter Pan without that. Come on.
Yeah, I know. It's funny because we did change so much of this play, but at the same time, like, we kept all the stuff that makes the play what people like about the play, and I think that's really important too. You know, like the magic and the believing in something and all that, and the flying and the, you know, it's all still there, which is really fun.
Talk to me. You mentioned the flying. Talk about how that's done. I assume, you know, you're all on wires and all that. Talk about how magical it is for the audience to watch, but also how exhilarating / terrifying for you as actors to zip around above the stage.
Yeah, so for the flying in the show, we're in harnesses. We do this big flying sequence at the top of the show, and we're already harnessed up by the time the show starts. So underneath our costumes, which are, you know, for the darling children, they're beautiful pajamas. We're wearing these big metal diapers that we then hook up to wires off stage. And it took a little while to learn how to be in those. They go like around our hips, and then they pull us up from our center of gravity. But it's super fun, as you can imagine. So it took a little while to get used to them, how to walk around and still look like a person and not waddle and give too much away. And then we have moments where we just slip off stage discreetly, hopefully, and get hooked up to some wires. And then we have this big flying sequence, which always seems to get a really nice reaction from people because, though I haven't seen it because we are doing it, you can tell that it's really beautiful what they're doing with lights, and it looks like we're in the stars and there's music, and it's very magical and it's very fun. Yeah, I guess Justin can talk a little more about the other flying because you do most of it in the show. And
I don't use any wires, though. It's all real magic, and it's awesome. No, I do. I wear the same thing as everybody else, and it's just so fun. It's like, there's a lot of technicality to it, but once you're up there and once you are in the scene and you start to fly in front of an audience, there's a suspension of disbelief even for you, which is kind of cool. I don't ever think about being on the wire when I'm flying. I feel like I'm flying, and that's sort of magical.
Awesome. Talk to me about the costumes a little bit. You mentioned that, for Wendy and the Darling Children, it's, nightgowns at first, but what about the rest? I mean, Peter Pan, the iconic green outfit and the hat, and then, of course, you got Captain Hook and all the pirates. Like, take me into, the visual design of what you guys are wearing.
I love my costume. It seems pretty Peter Pan-esque, like traditional, but it's got like a little bit of an edge to it. I like to imagine that Peter Pan made his clothes, that like he found them in the forest and he just sort of, put them together, and it's sort of exaggerated. And I think Peter, for many reasons, sort of wants to stand out and wants to be different than other people. And so I think his costume represents that in a way. And all the Lost Boys costumes are really fun. The Lost Boys sort of seem like they didn't change their clothes from the streets of London in a way. It kind of seems like the clothes have sort of just stayed on them forever in this sort of magical way. But also the clothes seem like off the streets of London, but at the same time they seem like they're from a magical place. It's like Lauren Shaw, the costume designer, did a great job of like making it seem real but making it seem magical at the same time.
Yeah, and if you the Lost Boys in particular, like, it does look like they are wearing what they came to Neverland in.
Yeah.
And some of it's been a little added to, or they're wearing their shoes, but now they're like flowers sprouting out of their shoes, or they're wearing their school uniform, but now there's like a rope around their waist that they have accumulated since being in Neverland. So it's very cool. And they're also, they all look like they have different stories, the Lost Boys. They all look like they came from different backgrounds. They don't all just look like they came from the same neighborhood or necessarily even the same time sometimes. It's cool to see that. And the Darlings, we do start out in our nightgowns and our nightdresses. And then when we come to Neverland, there's something different about all of our costumes. The London part of the show, the beginning of the show, the nursery, it's all gray. There's no real color. We're wearing white and gray pajamas and slippers and everything. And then when we get to Neverland, we're in color. And the idea Lauren Shaw was explaining to me is that on our way into Neverland, the color has splashed up against our costumes. So, now there's a colorful bow on you, or like my nightgown, for example, has a bunch of orange splatter paint on it. And it's as if I've crashed into Neverland and the color is wiped off on me, which I think is a pretty cool concept.
I didn't know that. That's cool.
And then when you get back,
that's really cool. I love when, you know, even the costume symbology shift throughout the show. That I love that. Then it's something working on all levels. Talk about how the set design does the same. You know, what are we looking at visually? You know, we're the audience sitting there in the seats, and we're looking up on stage. What are we seeing in terms of, I'm sure, is it a similar transition from, you know, the more of a, you know, sterile nursery, and then the colors of Neverland and pirate ships and, you know, forest? You know, explain what we're seeing on set design.
The set design for the nursery is pretty typical Edwardian, I'd say. You know, grayscale, beautiful, but pretty realistic. You have sconces, you have fireplaces, you have a toy chest. And then the Neverland set kind of looks like an opera. It's just these huge set pieces. We have Toy Mountain, which is a huge scale version of the small stack of toys that you'll see in the nursery. And that's kind of, I think, to show that this is crafted of the minds of the children who are going there. This is, they're pulling from their own realities and bringing it to this imaginary place and exaggerating it and blowing it up and making it into whatever they want it to be. And it's big and it's colorful and it's more than them. And then, of course, we have this huge pirate ship, which, again, is kind of recalled to something you see in the nursery, but it's this big red ship with Captain Hook on it, and it's just, it's like opulent. It's very big. It's very much like, it reminds me the most of when I first saw it, is that this looks like an opera with these huge, huge set pieces. Yeah.
Awesome.
It's cool.
Go ahead.
One more thing about the Neverland set. I like the Neverland set because it doesn't look real. Like, there's one version you could have made Neverland of, like, a forest and, like, having it be green and lush and, like, you know, overgrown. But this Neverland looks like a dream, I guess. And I think that's sort of symbolic as the play starts to unravel toward the end. It's like these kids are living in a place that doesn't look or seem sustainable. And I've always liked that about the design.
Cool. Is there a tiger lily in this one, or is that something that's been modified?
Oh, yeah. We definitely have a tiger lily. And she's way more prevalent in this version than I'd say in the original. She's got her own storyline. She's got a lot of she's got a lot of the lines in the show that kind of tie the themes together. It starts out, you know, there's Wendy, and then you meet Peter, and that's established, and then you get to Neverland, and Tiger Lily becomes kind of the third member of this trio, and she's really speaking truth to power in a lot of these scenes. She'll often plant seeds for things. She'll say things to Peter and others that will come back later in the show. She's kind of, I'd say, one of the wiser characters. If we're all children, if we're all operating under the sense that these characters are all children or early teenagers, she definitely seems to be one of the wiser people in the show.
And who plays your brothers? There's always, you know, it's Wendy, Michael, John. You guys are a little bit trio too, but what, are we getting any, you know, adorable / talented young actors as little bros?
Oh, yeah. We have Christopher Flame playing John Darling, who's wonderful. He's so great, and he takes all of his kind of anxious lines about John, and he delivers them with such sincerity, but it's so funny to watch someone be so sincerely nervous. He does a really good job of that. And then we have Chauncey Chestnut, the incomparable Chauncey Chestnut, who's playing Michael Darling, the youngest brother. And he's 12, so he's the youngest member of the cast, which has been really interesting and refreshing to have such a young person around. We're all playing young people, but then to actually have a young person around, and he makes things fun, and super fun working with both of them.
Awesome. Now, in terms of the playwright, Laura Gunderson, we interviewed her, I guess, about a year ago because she was named most produced playwright of 2019 in the American Theater Magazine, and so that inspired us to reach out to the whole piece owner. But I want to hear from you guys, you know, what makes her such a singular talent, who's, you know, one of the best playwrights going now, and how involved was she with your guys, Britton, or was this more she wrote it and then you guys took and ran with it?
One of the things I like about Lauren Gunderson's writing is it's very sort of explicit about how the character feels. Like there's no, there is a lot of like, you know, subtext going on, but also people say things sort of straight out and they say it like how they feel. And there's a lot of moments in our play where we're calling each other on each other's stuff. And I think Lauren Gunderson is really good at doing that. And I think it's a good idea to have a writer like her, who I would say is a contemporary writer, and writes in a very sort of, you know, modern voice, do a adaptation of an old school, you know, children's story, because she gets the humor of the original, but she sees the sort of issues and she'll just incorporate the issues into characters' thoughts. And I've always thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I think another thing about this production, because we've been in previews for about a week and we just opened on Monday, so we've gotten a couple of different types of audiences. Some of them are more children, some of them are more adults, but I think something that Lauren's words do a pretty good job of is speaking to different demographics of people, different age groups. Like we will get laughs at some nights on some parts that, you know, we've never gotten laughs before because there are more 7-year-olds in the audience. And sometimes the parents find things more funny. And it's interesting because it means that every night is kind of going to be a different performance and a different reaction, which is exciting. But I think that's part of the reason why this is such a great family show, is because everyone finds something to enjoy about it.
Awesome. Well, you guys have been more than generous with your time. Just to sort of wrap it up in closing, take us out of here. Why should our listeners come out to this? If they, you know, there's a lot of shows, of course, around the holiday season, but why does this one stand out? Why should they come? It's here between now and January 12th. It's the holiday season. People are off maybe with their families. They're looking for something magical. Why should they come to this?
This play is definitely like the biggest play I've ever done in my life, and I'm having the time of my life, and I feel the feels as we move through the acts of this play, and I kind of feel like the audience does too from the times that we've done it so far, and I feel like as the audience feels things, I feel it more, and it's this sort of big, epic, technically challenging, exhausting play, but at the same time, it's got this beautiful emotional heart that I'm still discovering and still becoming more and more aware of as we do it more. So I'm really excited to share it with people.
Yeah, I think it's very much a feel-good story. It's like going to a play date. You know, you go and you see the magic, there's spectacle, there's flying, there's light, there's gorgeous music, there's heart. There's also, you know, some more emotional scenes where people in the audience can feel free to, like, really get into these characters and what they're feeling. But, yeah, I think it's just a nice way to spend time with people. And we're having fun. And I think that, you know, it's always fun to watch people have fun and be invited into the fun, and I think you'll leave feeling really good.
Awesome. Again, everyone, it is Peter Pan and Wendy at Shakespeare Theater, Sydney Harmon Hall, now through January 12th. Get your tickets now. Thanks so much. You guys were great.
Thank you.
Thank you.